Welcome to Commission Ed, the Air Force Officer Podcast. Here we explore the training and development of America's leaders in the application of air power and the profession of arms. The views expressed are those of the hosts and do not reflect the official policy or position of the United States Air Force, Department of Defense, or the U.S. government.
Welcome back to another episode of Commission Ed, the Air Force Officer Podcast. Hey, Reed, welcome home.
Hey, it is good to be home. Good to see you again, Colin.
Yeah, when did you actually get home?
I got home 22nd January, 2100 hours Eastern Standard Time. Not that I was counting or anything.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and today is now Saturday, January 25th. So you've had a few days home with the family. How's that been?
It's been fantastic. It has been fantastic.
Now, Reed, we were just talking before we hit the record button. You saw something pretty fabulously America, right?
I did, yeah. So today I got a bunch of honeydews done. I went and got some things for my car. I saw five bald eagles, North American bald eagles, sitting in trees on my drive today. Very America moment. Felt really good to see them.
That's awesome. Out in the wild, doing their thing. Welcome you back to America.
Yep, it was fantastic.
Well, that's really awesome, Reed. We're so excited to have you back. I'm sure your family is as well, especially your family, right?
Absolutely.
Well, before you came home, you managed to knock out an interview specific to the topic of enlisted commissioning programs, something that both you and I are not super familiar with. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that interview, and then we'll cut the audio over to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the person that we interviewed, Sam Parrish, he and I met at tech school when we were both at Intel school. He was leaving, I was just arriving, and we've run into each other since. He reached out, said he wanted to help provide some background and context on how enlisted members can apply to get a commission. He's got a breadth of experience, and it was really informative. I enjoyed the interview, and hopefully it'll provide our audience with some background and context on just the myriad of ways they can gain a commission if they're already an enlisted member.
Yeah. For our audience, especially those that are enlisted considering pursuing a commission as an officer, highly, highly recommend that you give your full attention to this episode. Sam was fantastic in providing all this great information and resources about various different ways that you can pursue that goal of becoming a commission officer. So without further ado, we'll cut it over to Reed and Captain Sam Parrish.
All right, greetings and welcome to this week's episode of Commission Ed. I'm Reed Gann, and today I'm going to be your host. We're very lucky to have a guest with us today. Why don't you go ahead and say hello, Sam?
Hey, I'm Captain Sam Parrish. I'm currently stationed at Ramstein Air Base here in Germany.
Hey, we're really excited to have you, Sam. Today, we're going to be discussing some of the other ways that you can commission. Colin and I have gone a little more in depth on ROTC and OTS, as that's our experience. But today, Sam's going to give us a rundown of some of the other ways you can gain a commission. It just goes to show there are a lot of ways that you can get to this destination if that's your goal. All right. So why don't you go ahead and just give us a little introduction, tell us a little bit about yourself so the audience can get to know you a little bit better.
Sure. So my dad was a senior NCO in the Army, and so I kind of grew up as a military dependent. We moved around a lot, ended up in Arizona. So if anywhere's home, Arizona's home. I graduated from high school there, met my wife, and enlisted in the Air Force at 18. The recruiter sent me to language school where I studied Persian Farsi, and after, you know, barely making it through language school, I ended up at Fort Meade where I worked as a linguist for about a year and a half. And then applied for the Airman Education Commissioning Program, which unfortunately isn't around anymore. But as a senior airman, I got a free promotion to staff sergeant, and they PCS'd me home to Arizona to go to school for 2 years and finish my degree. And after that, attend OTS, where I commissioned, and then went back to tech school to become an Intel officer.
Awesome. And that's kind of how we met, right? I remember meeting you at Intel school. You were about ready to wrap up. I was just starting. And I think we've actually run into each other in the desert, if I remember correctly. I was out there.
Yeah, at a Goodfellow, I went to Offutt, and at Offutt, I got to fly in an aircrew and I deployed a lot with them. And so on one of my fly-in trips to Al Udeed, we were there at the same time and crossed paths again. Yep. So it's a small Air Force, and you never know who you're going to see across the DFAC sitting at Al Udeed or run into on a TDY or deployment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I'm actually, so I haven't shared this with the audience. I've actually been away from my family for the last 6 months. I've been in the United Kingdom on a deployment of sorts. And my replacement is actually one of my students that I taught at OTS. So talk about a small world. Like you said, Sam, you know, we're going to run into each other all over the place. But yeah, to get the email that my replacement out here of my position was one of my former cadets just goes to show you never know, where you're going to run into folks. All right. So let's dive into this commissioning program that you participated in. I've got a lot of questions. And so why don't you just kind of give us the name of the program? I know you mentioned it's gone away. Do you know of other programs like that? Yeah, just kind of give us the background on how it all works.
Yeah, so in 2009, I applied for the Airman Education Commissioning Program. In the AECP, I was able to stay on active duty and attend college full-time to graduate and then go to OTS and become a new lieutenant. So unfortunately, in 2010, they selected more AECP students. In 2011, they had a board but cut the program because there wasn't funding for the program. So there's no more AECP, but there are several other programs that are similar and some that are a little different. But, you know, at the end, you're a second lieutenant, just the same. The current program that AECP kind of morphed into is called SLEC PA. It's the Senior Leader Enlisted Commissioning Program Active Duty Scholarship. And it's basically exactly the same thing, except it's moved from an Air Force program to a program that each MAJCOM commander can select one person annually. So it's much more competitive. In 2009, when I applied to AECP across the Air Force, there were 75 applicants and 72 got picked up. So roughly 92% selection rate. Now with SLEC PA, each MAJCOM commander gets one person a year. So much, much more competitive, not possible. So if you have, you know, the desire to commission and you still need a degree and you've been performing at the level to make you competitive as an enlisted person, SLEC PA is definitely something that an airman should consider, but just much more competitive than when I applied to AECP. I had an airman in San Antonio who we put together a package for SLEC PA. He didn't get picked up, but we rolled it right into a ROTC application for a scholarship, and he got picked up for that. So even if you're not competitive enough for something like SLEC PA, some of the other programs are less competitive.
Okay. So this is probably more focused towards those airmen who don't have a degree, whereas an OTS application would be for someone who's already got their degree. Is that probably the best way to think about the difference?
Correct. Yep. If you already have a degree, you can't compete for SLEC PA, to my understanding. There is a program called SLEC PO, which ultimately an applicant ends up at OTS. But again, that's the MAJCOM commander from every MAJCOM can pick one person a year for SLEC PO. And they don't go through the traditional OTS application process. They put all their stuff together and it flows up to the MAJCOM, and the MAJCOM chooses one person a year. So another pathway to OTS.
Okay. No, that's great. So where can some of our audience members go if they've either got airmen who they think should qualify, or if they themselves, you know, are kind of in that position? What's the instruction? Where's the best resource?
So one of the, I guess, challenges with enlisted commissioning is there's not a one source for all the different opportunities. For these SLEC P programs, every year I've seen it flow down from squadron leadership. So I imagine, you know, at the MAJCOM level, they put out we need applicants for this program, and it flows from the MAJCOM down all the way to the squadron, and then from the squadron leadership disseminates it to the flights. So every year I've seen a call out from my squadron saying, hey, send us your applications for this SLEC P program. The challenge is that, you know, you get it and you have like a 2-week deadline. So you got to be on top of things and you got to be ready. So when you see it 1 year, you can kind of start to prep for the next year. And that way, when it rolls down, you've been accepted to a university that has a ROTC program that you can be administratively attached to, and you don't have to get all that together in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, there should be an annual call out that comes down from the MAJCOMS, and then at the ground level, an airman can go to their chief or superintendent, who hopefully pushes out taskers within their units.
Awesome. No, that's really good. Thanks for that. You know, when I was discussing in our OTS episode the variety of ways you can get selected for OTS, I wasn't even aware of all these. I'd heard that there were these programs out there. It just goes to show how many different ways you can get selected for OTS. And if you have a desire to be commissioned, you got to start talking to people, because that's how you're going to find out these various options. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So Sam, you've also got some notes you've put down on some other commissioning programs you wanted to discuss with the audience.
Yeah. So I had an airman when I was a flight commander who wanted to go to the academy. And what a lot of people don't know and understand is that at USAFA, the United States Air Force Academy, they have so many positions every year that they hold for airmen to come and go to the academy. And there's a program called LEAD, the Leaders Encouraging Airmen Development Program, that an airman can apply to. Generally, you have to be under a certain age. I'm pretty sure it's 23 and not have any dependents. But if you're under that age and don't have any dependents and you have some leadership skills and have been able to demonstrate that, you can apply to go to the Air Force Academy. I think it's under 22, you can even go to the prep school. And when I was a flight commander, I helped an airman through this process. You know, I filled out a letter of recommendation and he got all his stuff together, and he's a cadet at the academy right now. There's also a handful of medical commissioning programs, and these programs also have annual numbers they hope to meet and sometimes don't. So if you meet all the prereqs and you apply, a lot of times that's what it takes to get in. I've known a lot of people that were interested in this IPAP, Inter-Service Physician Assistant Program, where you stay on active duty and you go to school there in San Antonio. It's a joint program, so you have people from the Army, Navy, Air Force, all the branches of the military who stay on active duty, and it's their job to learn to be a physician assistant. There's not a bachelor's degree requirement for that one, but there are different, you know, anatomy and physiology and specific classes that people have to take for that. The NECP, Nurse Enlisted Commissioning Program, is almost the exact same program that I got into. Just if you want to be an Air Force nurse, that one's still around. So you can stay on active duty, get accepted to a nursing program at a university that has an ROTC detachment to handle all your administrative things in the Air Force, and be a full-time student pursuing a nursing degree. And the last medical commissioning program that is really about as sweet a deal out there, it's the EDMP2, Enlisted to Medical Degree Preparatory Program. And in this program, I'm pretty sure you have to already have a bachelor's degree, and I'm sure it's very competitive. But if you're picked up for this program, you get to spend 2 years getting ready to take your MCAT to be competitive for medical school. And so all you do is go to class at the, it's called USHU, I think. It's a military university there in the Maryland, D.C. area. And all they do is take classes and get ready for the MCAT for 2 years. And at the end of their 2 years, they take the MCAT. And if their scores are competitive enough, they can commission as second lieutenants and go to medical school there in the D.C. area. A second lieutenant going to medical school for 4 years, getting paid as a second lieutenant, like to get a medical degree. If their scores aren't good enough, a lot of people will get a scholarship, HPSP, Healthcare Professional Scholarship Program, where they'll be in some sort of reserve status and be going to medical school at a university across the nation. And somewhere along the line, they go to OTS while they're in that program, and then commission, or they're already commissioned, but they're not on active duty. So they're getting like a stipend, and they're getting their school paid for going to medical school. But yeah, EDMP2, one of those programs out there that I've had people interested in. I know someone in my current unit that applied, but I've never helped someone along that route. But an awesome, awesome program if an airman is looking to become a medical doctor. IPAP, if an airman's looking to become a physician's assistant. And NECP, if someone is looking to become a nurse. And my recommendation for anyone that is really interested in any of these programs is to just start Googling and eventually, you know, find all the words that are important and keep Googling and find someone who's either been in the program or applying for the program and just pick their brain and learn what made them competitive and pursue it that way.
No, thanks, Sam. That was a great rundown. I was never a flight commander in what used to be COT, commissioned officer training. That was where JAGs, chaplains, and all the medical professionals who had been direct commissioned were trained at OTS. That's been since rolled into the normal OTS experience. So they're all with the rest of what used to be, again, the line of the Air Force. Now that that's all rolled into one thing, I'm sure the OTS flight commanders have a better experience and knowledge base about all those training medical programs. But yeah, I remember talking to some of the COT flight commanders, and it seemed like an alphabet soup of all the variety of programs that their students had been through to get where they are. So thanks for that good rundown. That's really helpful. It seems like there's a lot more specialized things trying to recruit some of these hard to recruit positions in the medical community. Is that kind of your experience when it comes to looking at these enlisted to commissioning programs?
Yeah, I think the bottom line for these programs is you have to meet the prereqs, and the prereqs are different for every program. So if someone's interested in these programs, they got to Google them, they got to find the prereqs, and maybe it takes a year or two for them to get all the prereqs. But once you have the prereqs and you have a couple good EPRs and an award or two, and you put together your package and apply, you miss every shot you don't take. So sometimes it takes once or twice, but if you keep shooting, eventually you're going to make it. And that's kind of how I've, you know, done my whole Air Force career, is I throw my name in a hat and maybe I don't get picked, but I throw my name in another hat and maybe I don't get picked. But if I throw my name in enough hats, eventually my name's going to get picked out of a hat. And that's the reason, you know, I'm a captain today instead of a tech or master sergeant.
Yeah, that's outstanding advice. I've definitely found that to be the case as well. And I love that quote. That's something I live by all the time. You're going to miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So you just got to keep trying and try to get your name out there. When you were going through this experience, did you work with the base education office?
So the base education office is a good place for anyone to start. They're supposed to have like the down low on every program. When I was an airman and putting together my AECP application, I found that they knew where to go, but weren't the smartest on all the nuts and bolts. So the reason that I got picked up is because I was the smartest on all the nuts and bolts. So by the time I submitted my application, when I was an airman at Fort Meade, I was the smartest person on all of Fort Meade on my program. And I could tell you how something worked or when it was due or why I needed a waiver or didn't need a waiver. And the education office could kind of point you in the right direction, but couldn't answer all those questions. So for someone who wants to be competitive, they need to know the ins and outs of the commissioning program they're applying for better than the people that are supposed to know the ins and outs. And once you know them better, you can submit the most competitive package. And yeah, I found that by the end of it, there was no one that could tell me anything about AECP that I didn't already know.
That seems really in line with most of my students' experiences. You know, the application process is challenging enough that you're going to have to go out and get it. You're going to have to go in and put in the work to get yourself over the finish line. There's a lot of people out there willing to help you get started and get pointed in the right direction, but it's going to take you to get across the finish line. So that seems like a really common experience across all these application processes and experiences.
Yeah, in my experience, when I didn't know what I didn't know, I just went to Google, and I actually found an article that was written in, I think, some Fort Meade Post newspaper about a senior airman that got into the same program I did, but in 2004, and she went away to UCLA in California for school. And at the time, MySpace was big, and I actually found her on MySpace, and she just happened to be a lieutenant stationed at Fort Meade. And so as a senior airman, I started this conversation with this lieutenant at Fort Meade, and before I submitted my application, we went through it all together, and she got to give me her feedback and keep me pointed in the right direction. So having a mentor that's already been through what you're trying to be through or been through something similar is really, really helpful. And back in the day, MySpace was the way that I found my mentor.
You're dating yourself a little bit there.
Yes. Yeah. No more MySpace.
Yeah. No, and that's a, you know, shameless plug for what we're trying to do here as well. That's part of the reason we've got this podcast going. We are happy to try and give you guidance ourselves or put you in touch with someone who has gone through the program you're looking into. So please feel free to reach out to us either at our email address or at our various social media outlets. So now that we've gone through some of those programs, which thanks for the great rundown, Sam. We have, you know, a couple more questions about your transition from enlisted to officer. I was a civilian applicant to OTS. Colin came into ROTC. So neither of us were enlisted before we were officers. And you know, we kind of want to talk about some questions about that perspective. You know, what was your perspective as a prior E looking at officers and thinking about that transition? Was it purely a financial decision? Was it more about leadership? Was it more about responsibility? What was like your lens as you were looking at officership? What were you thinking about?
Yeah, as an airman, you know, I really wanted to go to school, and I really liked that when I came in the Air Force, I got to go to language school, and that gave me basically half a college degree. And I was looking for a way to finish what I started at language school, and this commissioning program was an opportunity to go to school. So at first, the end goal wasn't becoming a lieutenant. It was more going to school. And I just, you know, was fortunate enough that I got to be a lieutenant. So yeah, I think now after, you know, I commissioned in 2011, so it's been 8 years or so. I think most people, I would hope that they have more leadership aspirations than I did at the time, but I've definitely grown into those things. But yeah, as an airman, I just want to go to school, and getting to stay on active duty and go to school was too good a deal to pass up. But yeah, as an airman, when I talk to airmen and NCOs about commissioning, one thing I like to mention is how black and white my life was as an airman. I would come to work and I would put on my headphones and I would do my job. And that's all that mattered, is that I had a job to do and I did my job. So very, very black and white. As a new lieutenant, I would come to work and I didn't really have a specific job. You know, I was a deputy flight commander, and there were 70 guys in my flight, and they were all over the world, and the flight commander was deployed, and my flight chief, you know, was deployed. And so it was, you know, me as a new second lieutenant with a senior airman or a staff sergeant kind of running this whole flight of 70 airmen all over the world. And there's not, you know, a checklist for that. And there's not a show up to work and put on your headphones and do your job for that. Like, as an officer, my life became very gray in that nothing is very well defined, that you kind of define what you do and how you do it, and you either fail or you don't. And I found as an airman, it was very easy to come to work and be successful. And as an officer, there's not a solid definition for success. So yeah, you come to work and you do the best you can. And me personally, I feel like I fail forward a lot, where I show up and I don't really know what I'm doing. And it takes me, you know, 6 months to kind of get my hands around how I'm supposed to do what I do. I finally start to get good at something just in time to PCA to a new unit, or PCS to a new base, where I have to start all over and fail for a couple months before I actually start being good at my job. So yeah, as an officer, life is gray, not black and white. As an airman, life was black and white, and it was very easy to come to work and do my job.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective. I love that quote. There's not a checklist for that. I love that. You know, we're going to make a t-shirt with that. So that was definitely something I observed teaching a lot of prior enlisted students at officer training school. We would often just point them to relatively vague guidance and then kind of say, figure it out. That was kind of what was expected. And that was something that they mentioned a few times, that they were used to the checklist, you know, showing up and doing the job exactly as you described. And do you think that was the hardest part of the transition for you, is that change from the pretty black and white life of enlisted to the more gray of an officer? Or what was the hardest part of the transition?
Yeah, I really think that was that I was used to, you know, I knew how to be an airman. I knew how to come to work and do my job. But as a lieutenant, I didn't have a very specific defined job. I think there are some officer career fields, the rated officers, for example, you know, or if you're a medical professional, your job is more defined. But as a leader of airmen, there's no set AFI to read. If you do these things, you'll be a successful flight commander, or you'll be a successful deputy flight commander, or a successful, you know, OIC. So yeah, as an airman, everything was just much better defined. I imagine, you know, at the NCO and senior NCO ranks, they live in more of the gray, but it's still more black and white than I feel like my career as an officer has been.
Awesome. What do you think is the most valuable perspective being an enlisted member has given you as an officer now?
So yeah, I know as a new lieutenant, my interaction with other lieutenants and young CGOs, at least through my OTS experience, and I imagine in ROTC and at the academy, there's not a lot of interaction with junior airmen. So I've met lieutenants that have been in the Air Force. You know, they did their 4 years in ROTC or 4 years at the academy, and they never really had to deal with airmen or talk to airmen, or they just don't understand how to interact with airmen. And so because I was an airman, I knew how to talk to an airman, and I knew what motivated me as an airman. And so it's helped me motivate my airmen and kind of understand where they're coming from. Whereas a lieutenant that has never experienced being an airman maybe doesn't have the same perspective. Yeah, I think it helps me connect with my airmen, especially, you know, I was a linguist, and as a new lieutenant, I was working with linguists, and as a captain, I've worked with linguists. So I had this automatic connection that, you know, we'd been through the same basic training, and we'd been through the same kind of tech school. And when you can kind of say you've come from the same place, it's much easier to put yourself in someone else's shoes. I think being an enlisted airman helps with my empathy, right? I can empathize with an airman. My dad was a senior NCO, so a lot of times I look at senior NCOs and I see things that I saw in my dad. And so as a leader, I think my skills in empathy really help me lead my airmen. And the more a leader can develop empathy for the people he or she leads, the more effective the leader can be at taking care of people and getting the mission done.
That's really interesting, and I appreciate that a lot. One thing I was thinking of, do you find it challenging to have to be a jerk sometimes if you have more empathy for your people? I'm trying to explore that line, I guess, right? At some point, you're going to have to give someone difficult news. You're going to have to hold the line on some standard, or you're going to have to be hard on them. And one thing I found at least challenging at first when I was an OTS flight commander, I empathize with my students so much because I was there such a short time ago. I mean, I was a flight commander in the same squadron that I was a student in. I was in my own flight room. And whereas I used to be behind the desk, now I'm standing up at the front. You know, when I'm kicking on doors at 4:30 in the morning to wake my students up, that was my room, you know, not that many years ago. And for the first class or two, I related to them so much that I had a hard time being hard on them because I kind of empathized a little too much. How have you found a way to balance that? Or is that just unique to my experience? Or what are your thoughts on that kind of idea?
I think personally, any time that I've asked, you know, my NCOs or my airmen to do something hard, I try to at least be there with them at first, right? And I think as long as I'm there, like I have gone to work on a Saturday at midnight and stayed until Sunday morning writing a quarterly award. And usually when I do that, you know, I have the airman we're writing on and the airman supervisor and my flight chief. And if we're all doing that because we got a last minute, hey, this is due on Monday, as long as we're doing it together, I feel like it legitimizes my position in their eyes, and it also motivates them to continue to do those kind of hard things like coming in at midnight on a weekend. I think that's kind of the opposite direction of where you were going with that.
But it's good truth at the same time. I mean, I love that if you're there with them, that it's easier to ask them to do hard things. Now, I think that's an absolutely important nugget of wisdom there.
Yeah, especially when I was a lieutenant and I was in my flying squadron, there was always more to do than could be done in a day. And I really learned to delegate there, and how even in delegating tasks, you can still be very fulfilled at the end of the day. And I think just knowing that everything had to get done, when you have 10 things to do and you're one person and you've got a tech sergeant here and a staff sergeant there and an airman there, and you can kind of pass the tasks out and together kind of accomplish all these things where at the end of the day, you can say that you got it all done. It's surprisingly fulfilling. And I think especially in that unit where everyone is just so used to, you know, so hard to get things done, when you got a deadline, you just get it done. One of my DOs once, I remember him saying something like, if you wait till the last minute, it only takes a minute, which isn't necessarily the best life advice. But I think I've run into that as an officer, especially in that first unit I was in, because we had so many people in so many places busy all the time. So if you wait till the last minute, it only takes a minute. Again, not the best life advice, but one way to get things done.
Yeah, sounds like that DO has had a lot of last minute things pop up to develop that kind of knowledge. That's great. So this has been really great, Sam. I really appreciate it. What is some advice that you have for any prior enlisted members or members who are enlisted right now who are looking to commission?
Yeah, I think for anyone that wants to be competitive at anything, in the Air Force in particular, the best thing you can do is show up, be good at your job, and lead. So as long as you do those three things, when it comes to trying to get into OTS or trying to get into another commissioning program, or if you want to be a senior NCO someday, if you show up, you're good at your job, and you lead, people are going to know who you are and what you're about. And if people know who you are and what you're about, they're going to look to give you opportunities that people who aren't well-known, you know, who they are and what they're about, don't get. So if you're an airman and you're good at your job and you show up to things that maybe aren't your day-to-day job, but, you know, an extra opportunity to lead or to learn to lead. So one of the reasons I got into my program is that my commander at the time was holding like a self-defense kind of combatives course, and he would do it periodically. And as an A1C, I decided that, you know, for 2 weeks straight, I would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go to my commander's self-defense course that he was teaching. And so, you know, in this squadron of 200, 300 people, I was just an airman, but my commander knew who I was and what I was about because I showed up to this extra opportunity. And so when he heard, you know, Airman Parrish, he knew what my face looked like. And he knew that I was willing to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and do something outside of my normal day-to-day to be a better airman. So that's where I showed up. As an airman, I didn't have a lot of military leadership opportunities, but I was involved in things off base. You know, I was working with the Boy Scouts, and so I kind of developed my leadership skills there and was able to demonstrate that I could lead in that kind of volunteer work. And as an airman, as a linguist, I was good at my job. I had really good language scores. So with my good language scores, with the leadership, I was able to demonstrate even outside of a military capacity. And because I showed up and my commander knew who I was and what I was about, everywhere along that chain, people were willing to push my application for a commission. So show up, be good at your job, and lead. And as long as you do those three things, you'll be competitive for competitive opportunities like commissioning.
That's awesome. That's a really great rundown and solid advice. We get that question quite a bit in our interactions with our audience, and it's something we love to answer, but it does strike me sometimes as if they're asking the question, how can I be competitive? I'm applying for a board in 2 months. My thoughts are it's kind of too late to really adjust, right? You kind of need to make your excellence be part of your life. You need to have started this a while back, and it sounds like that lines with, you know, what you're recommending there. It needs to be part of who you are.
Yeah, I agree. I've helped airmen and NCOs apply to various commissioning programs. Just last year, I had a tech sergeant, awesome tech sergeant, been in the Air Force for like 13 years, you know, been deputy flight chief and everything, just doing amazing things and taking care of airmen. I also had a senior airman who really hit the ground running, you know, got a BTZ, you know, an early promotion to staff sergeant, and was getting awards, you know, while he was on casual status waiting to come do his job. He was working for Honor Guard, and he left there with an Air Force Achievement Medal just because he was such an awesome, awesome airman. So they both applied to OTS at the same time. The airman got picked up and the tech sergeant didn't, even though they were probably both ready to be lieutenants. They would both be awesome lieutenants. The tech sergeant had 13 years of a career that showed, you know, spikes of awesomeness. And then, you know, not that he was ever not awesome. He just had a whole 13 years to kind of show his leadership potential. And just his trajectory in his career wasn't as, you know, quick and abrupt as the senior airman, where the senior airman, you could look at his career and you could say that 90%+ of his career, he was awesome. Where you look at the tech sergeant and you could say, wow, like this guy's a good 50 to 75% awesome, but he had, you know, ebbs and flows of awesomeness where, you know, there were years where I'm sure he came to work and he did his job and he was good at his job, but he didn't have that 90%+ awesomeness to show. So I think as a junior person, it's easier to demonstrate that you're awesome 100% of the time. Whereas a senior person, you've got a lot of time. Whereas my tech sergeant, when he was an airman and when he was a new staff sergeant, hadn't considered commissioning. So he wasn't working towards, you know, showing up, you know, being good at his job and leading necessarily to compete for a commission. Whereas as a new tech sergeant, he decided that that was something he was interested in. He hadn't had years to build it. He had years, you know, his black and white coming to work and doing his job and getting things done, but not necessarily the same consistency across his career, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I appreciate that. That's, again, great perspective. Having been a former OTS instructor, I do get a lot of questions from people who have been selected or are applying, but I haven't helped as many people go through the application process. So I really value that insight, that, you know, that perspective that you bring. So this has been super helpful. I hope the audiences find it helpful as well. Sam, what are, you know, your last little tidbits of wisdom before we sign off for the week?
Yeah, I think for anybody that's interested in a commission, as long as they have the record and the desire, they should go for it. As long, you know, even when someone, you know, there are naysayers out there. When I was an airman, you know, there were other airmen who I would tell them I was applying for this program. And, you know, they would say, oh yeah, nobody gets picked up for those kind of programs. And just kind of like we talked about earlier, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And so even though, you know, I had buddies who were like kind of bashing, doing more than showing up and doing your job, I threw my name in that hat anyway. And so when I threw my name in that hat and I got picked up, I got buddies that are still staff sergeants today. Not that there's anything wrong with being a staff sergeant, but it's just, you know, a different way to be in the Air Force. So just take every opportunity that you get. I've thrown my name in hats and not been picked up for programs since commissioning, but I keep throwing my name in hats because eventually I'll get picked up for something special. So don't ever stop, even when someone's telling you that it's too competitive or you're not cut out for whatever it is you're applying for. Eventually you'll have a new commander. Eventually you'll, you know, be in a different place. And so just don't stop and don't let someone telling you no one time keep you from achieving a goal.
Awesome. Well, I think that is going to be a wrap. Really appreciate it.
Wow. Awesome, Reed. First of all, thank you so much to you and Sam. That was really a fantastic interview. What great information. Thank you for taking the time to put that all together. I really hope that our audience will take that information seriously, look into it, and become smarter on what the processes and opportunities are for enlisted commissioning. So I'm going to turn it over to you first, Reed, to offer some thoughts on the interview now that you've had a chance to revisit it.
Yeah, happy to. So again, totally agree. To me, this just really cemented how important it is to ask people. You know, Colin, you and I, we're fairly competent at what we do. There's no way I had that amount of information, you know. So we ask people, everyone needs to ask others how to figure this kind of stuff out. Two real quick things that I thought were worth mentioning. First, there's an acronym that was used that we didn't spell out, BTZ, below the zone. So if you recall from our promotion episode, traditionally promotions happen in these dedicated timeframes, and those are zones. And if you are early, you get promoted before your normal zone, that's a BTZ or below the zone promotion. So apologies for not spelling that out. Next, something that he mentioned, I just think is so important. I want to bring it up again. And that's this idea of predicting the arrival of some sort of task or application window. Annual awards is another example of things that happen every year. The tasker is going to come out right around the same time. And if you can just lead that by even a couple weeks, you're going to save yourself a whole lot of pain. So this idea of leading ahead and, you know, using something as simple as an Outlook calendar to set yourself a reminder for next year so you're not running up against a tight timeline, that really can separate you from the pack. So just a couple things that I thought really deserve some emphasis.
Yeah, just a real quick follow-up on predicting the schedule for these kinds of things. It's no different than predicting your annual performance report, your EPR, enlisted performance report, or officer performance report. It all comes up, you know, at the same time every year. It should be no surprise. Same thing goes for all of these awards or these competitive packages, different opportunities that you as an enlisted airman or an officer in the Air Force can pursue. And then that also ties in with what you talked about in the episode at the beginning of the year about setting goals. Having that Everest goal, right? Having that stretch goal. Maybe this is a stretch goal for you to pursue a commission as an officer in the Air Force, but don't let it stop at just being this thing that you are going to put out there for you to stretch for, but very easily you could take this Everest goal of becoming an officer and turn it into a SMART goal and pursue it. And just like Sam said, hey, maybe you're not going to make it the first time around, but you're going to get better and you'll have all that information in place so that the next time it comes up, boom, you're ready, it's done. And you can put yourself forward for that package, for that award or whatever, and hopefully get picked up for it. Just keep trying, keep trucking away. Something's going to break loose and you're going to get what you want.
Yep. Love it.
So that's some really good stuff. I want to share some of my thoughts, but before we get to that, I did notice that we don't yet have a way to get in contact with Sam. Reed, what do you think is the best way for people who want to pick his brain on these different types of commissioning programs for enlisted airmen? How should they do that?
First thing I would recommend is to get in touch with us via our emails and social media stuff. We can put you in touch with him. That'd be probably the most direct. But also, he's part of the Facebook group. You can find him there and he's active. So if you engage with him in that forum, that's probably the easiest way to get directly to the source of all that info.
Yeah. Like we've been saying at the beginning of this commentary is that you need to ask for help. Reach out to us, reach out to Sam, reach out to other people who have been through the process of whatever it is that you want to do before and ask for help. That's why we're doing this. That's why we're here. We want to help you get what you want. And one of the ways that we can do that, you know, Sam mentioned that one thing you can do to get information about these different programs is to use Google. Well, I've already done that for all of you, and I've included the links to official sources for the majority, if not all, of the enlisted commissioning programs that are out there, and encourage people to go follow these links, look them up, ask us their questions so that we can all get smarter on them together. I'd like to point out that some of these programs, or ones that are very similar, are available to Air Force ROTC cadets and commissioned officers. So it is worth your time as an enlisted airman, as a cadet in Air Force ROTC, or as a commissioned officer to get familiar with each of these different programs so that you can possibly use it for yourself or be a mentor to enlisted airmen later on who are interested in pursuing a commission. And one thing that I want to say about that as well is in the interview, Reed, Sam mentioned that one place that airmen can go for help with these different commissioning programs or for more information is the base education office. But both you and he mentioned that the base education office is not necessarily the best place to go. And I wanted to revisit that a little bit, get your thoughts on it. Why is it that the education office is not really the best place to go? What do you think is going on there?
Well, first off, my personal experience with the base education office is very, very limited. It's where I do recommend enlisted members go to get advice. I think what we were both trying to get at is that, first off, the base education offices are usually manned by civilians and they've not done these programs. And as a result, they can't have first-person knowledge and experience with the application process. Yes, they're going to have a lot of good information. They're going to have a lot of, hey, this is how you get started. This is what the documents say. But that kind of information simply doesn't measure up to what you need to get all the way through the process. And the best place to get that is someone who's been through it. So I hope we didn't dissuade our audience from going to the base education office. Yes, you absolutely have to. For enlisted airmen, that is how you apply. You can't do it without the base education office. However, it will probably not be sufficient. And I think that's probably what we were trying to communicate.
Yeah, we want to say here that the base education office is not trying to lead you away or, you know, keep you in the dark or purposely be vague about anything that's going to lead to a commission in the Air Force.
Yes.
I mean, just take us for example. We don't know everything about these different commissioning programs, and we are commissioned officers in the Air Force. We can't possibly be experts on all of them. And so don't expect that these poor civilians at the education office or the airmen that are supporting them there have all the answers to your questions. The education office is a starting point, and it is the ending point for when you submit your package. Everything else in between is going to require that you do some legwork, talking to people, gathering all your information, and we hope that we can, through this podcast as well, connect you to some resources that will be useful to you.
Yeah.
But even so, if you really want to be an officer, you're going to have to go out and get it. Nobody's going to do the work for you, but there are many ways to make it happen for you.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I know we've said this before, but it was universally the experience of every single student I had that it took significant time, energy, sacrifice, and work for them to end up at OTS.
Yeah, and the same is true for Air Force ROTC. I mean, it's no picnic in the park to earn a commission through ROTC. It just is a little bit more streamlined because of the way that it's set up. So anybody who's going to end up as an officer in the Air Force is going to have to put in a large amount of time and effort to make it happen. And so that brings us to my last thought on this. And I think this is where we want to end as well, is just revisiting those thoughts that Sam shared about what it takes to make yourself competitive, really for anything in the Air Force, namely show up, be good at your job, and lead. What do you think about his advice there, Reed? More specifically, how do you think this lines up with what the Air Force values in its officers?
I really liked these three truisms, if you will, Sam offered for the audience. First off, let's address lead first and foremost, without question, right? That is what we do. It's expected that you lead. So yeah, absolutely agree with that one. No questions asked for that one. The next one, which is the next easiest one to address, is being good at your job. Absolutely. That is the starting point for everything. When people are asking me, hey, how can I be competitive for an OTS package? And I kind of mentioned this when we talked about with Sam. If you've not been good at your job for all the years that you've been working, you missed the boat. If you want to be a major, if you want to be promoted, if you want to be a squadron commander, if you haven't been good at your job, if you haven't been dedicated and excellent in your craft, if you haven't been reading on your off time, if you haven't been thinking about it at night, if you haven't been really, really trying to be good, you're too late. So that one, again, pretty easy for me. The show up, I think, is a little bit more nuanced. And I think that's one we want to talk a little bit more about. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you, first off, that being good at your job and leading, those are no-brainers, prerequisite. Even to success as an enlisted airman or officer or any other career that you might choose outside of the military, if you truly want to be successful at something, you have to be good at it, obviously, and then lead and influence the people around you. So yeah, those are prerequisite. On this idea of showing up, I understand what he's saying, but I do fear that it encourages participation in the unit mission or any other non-mandatory events in order to be seen and be known by leadership. You know, I'm afraid that it's asking airmen to just follow the squadron commander and the chief around. And that doesn't sit right with me, even though I know exactly what it is that Sam is recommending.
Yeah. So I think you can skin this a couple different ways. The first is you must be known, right? This is a hard reality of being in an organization of people, especially a large organization. There are approaching 340,000 airmen in the Air Force. That is a large organization. And if you are to make it through the fray for whatever it is, promotion, awards, packages, whatever it is that you are looking for, it's going to be easier if people know who you are. That's just a cold, hard reality. So how do you balance this idea of achieving that, getting to be known without being a cynic? And I think the way I like to look at it is the second way, which is to say, I think you need to be actively involved in what it means to be an airman in the Air Force. And that includes all these other opportunities, like Sam mentioned, you know, the workout opportunity or, you know, the teaching opportunity. I think that includes the squadron picnics. I think it includes the service projects. I think it is easy to get jaded about those things and say, oh, you're just doing that because you're looking out for number one. And at the same time, I think it all depends on your perspective and your intent. And if your intent is to become part of the Air Force, to become an airman, to be involved in what it means to wear this uniform and to live this life, that I'm at peace with that idea. And I think Sam would agree with me. You know, maybe we'll ask him again sometime.
Yeah, I hope we do. I think he brings an excellent perspective that would be very useful to revisit on multiple occasions. And one of those perspectives is that I think his best advice that he gave kind of addresses this issue, is that you need to be living a lifestyle of excellence throughout your time as an airman or as an officer. You know, we've addressed this multiple times, and I'm sure we will over and over and over again, is that this is not just a job. That, you know, this idea of showing up outside of the things that are required of you, or just being good at your job, is that it's not just a job. It is a lifestyle. It is part of who you are, both on and off duty. That if there is a function going on in your unit, if there is a holiday party or something, you're going to be there because it's not a requirement of the job. It is part and parcel of the lifestyle of being an airman. And if you want to be truly excellent at that lifestyle, you are going to be there, and you're going to be there for the right reasons. Not because you want to take care of number one, not because you want to be a sycophant for the squadron commander, the chief, the first sergeant, or anything like that, but you want to be there participating in the Air Force and what the Air Force expects of its airmen. So, like I said, I don't have a problem at all with this idea of showing up, so long as we are doing it for the right reason, and the right reason is that we love our Air Force and we want to be part of it.
Yep, and I think it's a leader's responsibility to make it an environment where people want to be. I think that's about a wrap. What do you think, Colin?
That's absolutely it. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Commission Ed.
Thank you for listening to Commission Ed, the Air Force Officer Podcast. The views and opinions of the authors expressed herein do not state or reflect those of the U.S. government and shall not be used for advertising or product endorsement purposes. Mention of any specific commercial products, process, or service by trade name, trademark, manufacturer, or otherwise does not necessarily constitute nor imply its endorsement, recommendation, or favoring by the U.S. government. The mention of companies by name is solely for the purpose of discussion and should not be implied as endorsement.